True. True. Truth is always spoken here. Thank you so much. We never do walk alone if we look out and say, I see you, and I see you too. It's my pleasure to be up here this morning to introduce a dear friend of mine, professional colleague, who was birthed out of the Church of Religious Science organization here in Chico. And like I was trained basically with Reverend Dr. Carolyn McEwen Fish, and then we've branched, we've moved out, we have stepped out, and we've moved on in a big way. And so she has really moved on in a big way, and I'm sure we're going to hear about that this morning. Reverend Eileen Brownell is a wonderful speaker. She brings delight and humor and lots of wisdom. So please help me welcome Reverend Eileen Brownell.
This morning is very serious. I can't do that to the green, Michael. How can you do that? O'Keefe regularly played golf every Sunday morning, and he played it with three Orthodox Jews. Now, the challenge for him was the fact that every time he played, he got 90 strokes, and they always parred the course, which was 72. And he lived with that frustration through the summer, and as fall came around, and he was getting ready for winter and knew that the course was going to be closing down, and the snow was coming. He finally asked all the Orthodox Jews, why was it that they kept scoring 72? And he scored 90 week after week. And they said, it's very simple. We go to synagogue. We pray. We do the ceremonies. We do all the festivals. We eat correctly from sundown to sundown on Friday and Saturday. It's very simple what we do. So O'Keefe gave it a great deal of thought, trying to figure out what he was going to do and how he was going to handle this. And so he finally decided that the only way to get his game from 90 to 72 was to convert. And so that winter, he spent the time going to synagogue and converting to becoming an Orthodox Jew. And he looked forward to the spring with great anticipation because he was going to finally hit 72. And so the first day, the first Sunday they were out, they go out and they all hit 72, and he hit 90. And he was so frustrated and so angered by this process. And he finally said, what did I do wrong? Look, I became an Orthodox Jew. I joined a synagogue so I could hit 72. And one of the Jews looked at him and said, so which synagogue did you join? And he said, why, Beth Shalom? Hey, you fool, the Jew replied. He said, that's the synagogue for tennis. What O'Keefe didn't understand was the game of golf is really about 6 inches. The 6 inches between here and here. It's what's between your ears that really matters. It's not your physical skills. Of course, your physical skills help a little bit. Trust me, I know. But indeed, the greatest kingdom that is located within you is your mind. Or another way of looking at it is this is the cause and effect aspect of our spirituality. Our mind is the cause. The thoughts that we think, the thoughts that we have, is what creates the ultimate effect in our life. Now, trust me, if I doubt myself and my swing, my ball will not go very far. It'll end up in the sand trap, it'll end up in the water, or it'll just kind of dribble right on down about 20 feet away from the tee box with total frustration for me. And, of course, most recently, I never saw a tree that I couldn't hit. It can be easy to get upset at this game, especially after you spent a fortune on equipment and lessons and the time you've devoted to improving. You know, but I have to stop and think that when I hit a bad shot and then I get really upset about it, pound my club into the dirt, I'm just like anyone else. We all want to be perfect. And so I have to stop and I have to say to myself, when I miss a shot, it's all up here. Look at the beautiful day you're having. I'm grateful to be with the people that I want to be with. And I close my eyes and I stop and I come back to that place of center and I take a deep, deep breath. You see, that's what gives me the strength to break my club. So we're trying to do this in tandem today. Because how many of you play golf? How many? Oh, I got a few of you at least. Well, I want to make sure that everybody understands some of the terms that I'm using today. So we've got par, birdie, fairway, greens, woods, and putter. So par is what the experts who create the course, originally when they create it, par is what the experts say that you should be able to play on this course. And most courses in America are 72. That's par. And each hole has a designated number also. It's 3, 4, or 5. And so your goal is to try and get in the hole within however many strokes they dictate. That's par. A birdie, however, is one less than par. A bogey is one over par. Greens are the large little places up there at the top that you can see the flag, and that's where the hole is. Now, that hole is only about that big. Most of us wish it was about that big. However, that's what the green is, and the fairway is the long area from the tee box all the way up to the green. And then we have woods. Pardon me while I remove my quail. This is the big daddy of them all. This is the driver. And we have to have woods. We have other, they've been known as woods. Now they're not really woods anymore, but we still continue to call them woods because originally when Terry and I visited Scotland last year, we got to go through a museum where they actually showed us the old clubs that were made from one piece of wood. And then we have irons and chippers, and of course, don't forget the all-important putter. So now that you've got your lingo down, and know exactly what I'm talking about in a few short minutes, I want to share with you a story about Patty Sheehan. Now, Patty Sheehan was a Ladies Professional Golf Association Hall of Fame player. She was famous, or is famous, and she played on the professional circuit back in the 80s and 90s. And I had the opportunity to actually see her play one time when I was in Palm Springs. She was playing at an extremely important game in her life. And she was on a 5-par. Remember, she had wanted to get 5 strokes or less. She was on a 5-par. And to be able to stay in the competition and hopefully win the game, she needed to get a birdie. She needed to get 4 strokes. So she had already hit one ball, and she had gotten it part of the way down the fairway. And she was there, she was trying to establish what she was going to do next. How was she going to hit the next ball? What club was she going to use? And so she went ahead and she picked her club, and lo and behold, when she bopped it, she topped it. Now, what we call a top is when our club comes and gets along the top, and usually what happens with that is the ball just kind of dribbles down the fairway. Or wherever we are, in the grass on the side where we don't want to be. But anyway, she topped it, and sure enough, here on the green, surrounded by a creek and a bed of water, the ball went into the water, which meant she had a 1-stroke penalty. So all of a sudden, she was out of competition because she had just blown it. She wasn't going to be able to get that birdie. And so the commentator was really floored. Here was a woman who was a professional golfer, and she topped the ball. And so he did an instant slow motion replay of what she had done. But the mistake that the commentator did in that process was he should have gone further back than the actual stroke, because what he would have discovered in the process is her indecision in how she was playing that game. First, she strode up to the ball. She looked at it. She looked out. She decided on a wood. She grabbed her wood. She stepped back. Her caddy handed her an iron. She looked at it again, stepped back. No, this wasn't what she wanted, and she grabbed another wood, and she hit it. The important thing was the fact that she had made the wrong decision, she hadn't thought it through completely. Her indecision in selecting the club resulted in her loss of the game. Sheehan's poor swing was ultimately the result of her poor thought process. Bad swings lead to bad shots, but it's often bad thoughts that lead to the bad swings. You see, it's the thought process that seems to get us in trouble when we play golf, and or even when we play the game of life. It's our thought process that always gets us in trouble. Now, some of the essential parts about golf include focus, motivation, practice, decision-making, and how you talk to yourself, and goal-setting. Does that sound like anything you've talked about here in church? Now you know why the Jews went out on Sunday to play with O'Keefe. Let's explore some of the thought components today. Decide, commit, swing. It's as simple as all of that. I really wish it was. If it was, I'd be able to break 100. This, however, is what professional golfers tell us, that there's a think box and there's a play box. And when we're in the think box, we're in that analytical place. That's when we come back here and we look at what our target is down the road and we stand here, we look over the ball and we decide, okay, it's 100 yards. What's my normal 100 yards club? Is it an iron? Is it a wood? What do I need? Is it uphill or is it downhill? Because if it's uphill, I need a greater club. If it's downhill, I need a lesser club. How's the wind going? What's the weather like? Is it damp? Because that may slow the ball down. These are all things that we have to look at when we're making that decision. And of course, when we're in the think box, we're in our analytical left-hand brain. Now, of course, it does change because at some point in time, we have to move from that left brain thinking over here to the right brain thinking, grabbing our club, gripping it down, and just swinging away. Or as they always used to say by the Nikes, just do it. That used to be their theme. But oftentimes what happens is because we've already decided what we're going to do and we've made our decision, we just need to follow through. Unfortunately, for some of us, however, we move to that place of indecision even after we've made the decision. And when we come up here, we start to address the ball and we look down at it, and then we begin to doubt ourselves, just like Sheehan did. Did I pick the right club? Have I aligned my feet just right so it's headed towards that target down there? Or in my instance, it turns to that list. Grip the ball correctly, Eileen. 1 inch behind the ball. Turn, swing, back, shoulder down. And I go through a litany of about 6 or 7 things. Do you think there's any problem with my game at all? For me, that's the equivalent of standing on 1 foot for the rest of your life, fearful of making a decision. Because I want to be right. I want to be perfect. I want to do it just like my coach showed me. Unfortunately, fear gets in my way, and I top the ball, I hook it, I slice it, or it dribbles down the fairway just a few feet. How often do we defeat ourselves because we refuse to create something out of the fear that exists in our life? Take the time that you need in the think box. That may be your desk. It may be in the meditation chair. It may be in your prayer chair. But take that time that you need for the think box and then step up and release your fears and all fear that you have to be perfect. There's a lot of things in the game of golf that as players we cannot control. I can't control the weather. I can't control the speed of play. I can't control where the hole is. I can't control the pin placement. I can't control the courses, how the course was designed. I can't control how my partners are doing. What I can control, however, is my temper, my attitude, my club selection, and how I'm going to warm up for the game. All of those are my job and my responsibility. And in life, there are a lot of things we cannot control. The reactions and the behaviors of others, the weather, the traffic. I can control, however, my reaction to the idiot that just cut me off on the freeway. Oh, no, put that hand back. Don't forget you've got clergy on the back of your car, Eileen. All thoughts are totally in our control. Additionally, we control our goals and our intentions for the game. After a particularly bad day, a particularly awful round of golf, Robert decided that he wasn't going to go in and have a beer with his buddies at the clubhouse, but that he was going to go straight home. As he was walking back to his car, feeling really miserable about the game that he had just played, a police car pulled up and an officer got out and looked at him and said, "Say, about 20 or 30 minutes ago, did you tee off on hole 17? And he goes, "Why, yes. Yes, I did. How did, you know, did the officer looked at him, "Did you happen to slice your ball and it went out of the course and it went over the trees and out of bound?" And Robert was just really totally amazed. "Yeah, why, yes, how did I know? How did you know, officer?" And he said, "Well, that was simple. The ball went over the fence, went out of the course, hit the windshield of a BMW. The BMW hit six other cars, who in turn hit the engine, fire engine that was on its way to a fire. And because it couldn't get there, the building burned down. And really, what I want to know is, what are you going to do about it, sir?" Robert stood there and he thought for a few minutes. He said, "Well, I think what I'm going to do is shorten my stance, adjust my grip, and keep my head down more." Robert had already established his goals for his next game. And we all need goals and purposes in life for whatever we're going to do.
I thought he was
going to
have a beer.
No. We all need purposes and intentions, however. Might be beer for some. For me, I'm still trying to break 100 in the game. And goals give us purpose and direction. Intentions, however, help us focus on the present moment, what's happening for us right here, right now, and to remember our ultimate target. Everything is activated by our intentions. And as soon as we state them, as soon as we establish them, action begins to happen on them right away. And of course, what intentions do is they bring up all of our fears, all the fears that we need to heal and that keep us tied and tethered to our past. Intentions are about what we want to bring into our world and into the world as a whole. And intentions begin as soon as we declare them, and they call us back to the beginning, which is our ultimate goal. God's intention for each and every one of us is to live a life of abundance, of joy, of love. It's our choice how we choose to experience that. And remember that the only way God can experience life is through us. I keep wondering when she wants to experience a hole in one. We have to be willing to change if we want to accomplish our ultimate goal. When we let ourselves get stuck in our lives, we're surrendering to the strongest of natural forces, the instructional urge to resist change. Recently, I was working with my coach on my grip. I was in that mode of total frustration. I had just played in the last 10 days two lousy games. And that, of course, hurts my handicap. And in fact, I had been working on my grip off and on for the last 2 years with her. And it seemed like I just couldn't get it right. My thumb wouldn't go in the right place. My fingers wouldn't interconnect correctly. And every time I'd approach the ball and I'd stand up there to look at it, do you notice the smiley face? That's when I do a lousy shot, so I just keep smiling. But every time something went wrong, I blamed it on my grip. I complained one more time to Janelle, and she looked at me, and she said, do you want to change your current grip, or do you want to keep your current grip? Because if you want to keep it, we'll have to put a Band-Aid on everything else. If you want to change it, we can start to change it now, and it won't affect how you play or the mistakes that you make. It became crystal clear to me that to ultimately achieve my goal, I had to change. I could stay with what wasn't working and put Band-Aids on it, or I could choose to move through my layers of discomfort, my frustration, and the anger that I felt. It was up to me. It was my time to change how I thought about holding the club. Channel your energies towards the target, and the ball will follow. Not too long ago, I was playing with a guy for the first time. Sometimes when you go out to the golf course, if there's more than, you know, a group, if you're by yourself, they'll put you with other people. And so I was playing with this guy, and he walked up, and he put down, he teed up his first ball, and then he took a second ball out of his pocket, and he laid it down next to it. I looked at him, and I thought, that's really strange, two balls up at the same time. And after he hit his first ball, the one that he had teed up, he walked over and picked up the second ball and put it back in his pocket. Well, when he got back to the cart, I said, why did you take two balls up there? Why did you tee one up and lay the other? And he goes, well, you know what? I so seldom ever get over the water trap. I'm always prepared to hit the second ball. The key, however, to this was the fact that he had set himself up for failure. He had already anticipated or projected that he was going to go into the water and that he would need that second ball that he had laid down on the ground, rather than anticipating that with his first ball, he was going to make it through. By focusing on the fairway, he would have made it. However, because he chose to focus on his failures, more often than not, he hit into the water. So often we stay stuck in our past, and our thoughts must focus on the positive thought intentions and goals, not on what we haven't been able to do before. We must all have a target or something to focus on, something that's ahead of us in life to look towards. Ernest Holmes tells us in The Power of an Idea, we can change our thinking and by so doing enable the law, the invisible creative force, to act for us in an affirmative manner, in affirmative rather than negative. Remember, the game is simple. The ball doesn't move, it simply sits and waits for you. If you haven't seen the movie Bagger Vance, take a look at it. It really is all about religious science. It's positive movements forward. Golf is a game where our intention is to get the ball from into the hole with the least amount of strokes possible. And our goal is to keep improving so that ultimately in life we par the whole entire course. The only way that we can do that, however, is to take action by hitting the ball. And the only way we can hit the ball is to mentally focus through our thought process in a positive and affirmative way. Emma Curtis Hopkins states in The Scientific Mental Practices, all accomplishments are given under the power of thought. So just what is your target? What is your goal in life today? How long have you been sitting in the think box rather than moving to the play box? Are you ready to make a step forward? Are you ready to pick your driver and hit ahead? Are you ready to place your energy on the target that you have chosen? In golf, every shot has to have a purpose. And in life, every act that we do must likewise have a purpose that is done by our own creative thought process. What will you do today to begin your next game? This is the truth in my life, and this is the truth in yours, and so it is.